All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are Locked On Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we're kicking off Locked On Drake London Week, talking about his potential to impact in year one. We're going to be a little bit more positive on this podcast moving forward about the Falcons' future, as well as answering your listener questions about Deion Jones' future and the importance of the wide receiver position.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years, formerly at FalcFans.com, RIP, still going strong on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course, the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family. And today's episode of Locked On Falcons is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, where the game starts. So I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. Just like all the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family podcasts, you can find Locked On Falcons free and available on a variety of podcast platforms Monday through Friday, Apple, Odyssey, Google, Spotify, as well as on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to the Locked On Falcons YouTube channel and you'll get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. So hit that bell icon and whatnot. So today we are kicking off a week of Drake London, Locked On Drake London Week, where we'll be talking quite a bit about Drake London throughout the week.
Drake?
Yes!
And yes, you're going to get a lot of that audio clip in the coming days, as well as coming weeks, possibly months, if not years. But we're going to culminate this week, right? We got 4 days until we get to Thursday night / Friday morning, where that episode will not be about Drake London, but the schedule release, but it all sort of culminates on Sunday at the end of this week, at the beginning of next week, I guess you could say, where we will be doing a scouting report on Drake London. These are sort of my comprehensive scouting reports. Make sure you want to check that out, get sort of all the insight, you know, going through, you know, hopefully over 90% of Drake London's targets to really break down the type of player that he is and sort of the most thorough and in-depth evaluation of the player that you're going to find. That's what's coming next Sunday. But on this Sunday, you know, in the process of doing all the research that goes into that scouting report, you know, I was, you know, looking at some data, some stats and whatnot, and wondering sort of what we can expect out of Drake London this upcoming season, because he's going to be entering a very advantageous environment in order to put up immediate production due to the fact that the Falcons suffered significant turnover at the wide receiver position this offseason. He's coming into an environment where the team is not returning that many players. He'll be immediately expected to be that sort of number one guy in that wide receiver room. And I wanted to look back at, you know, the last most recent years and look at some of these first round wide receivers that have been taken since 2017. So the previous five drafts have been 18 first round wide receivers taken in that 5 year span. And I kind of wanted to compare the situation that Drake London's coming into in Atlanta to the environments that those guys were going into, looking at the previous year before those guys were drafted at the top five wide receivers in terms of, you know, who was returning and who was not. Because you look at the Falcons situation going coming out of 2021 and going into 2022, you know, Russell Gage, Olamide Zaccheaus, Tajae Sharpe, Calvin Ridley, and Christian Blake combined for over 1,300 routes run, according to Pro Football Focus, this past season. And now four of those guys are gone, leaving just Olamide Zaccheaus as the top returning wide receiver with about 373 routes run last year. And so that means that the Falcons lost 72% of the previous year's performance and production, at least based off of routes run. And I wanted to compare that with other first round receivers to sort of see how London compares and to see if anybody else sort of entered environments similar to that, where it was sort of wide open for them to come in and impact right away. And the answer was not really. Most of those guys, 17, in fact, out of the 18 first round wide receivers over the previous 5 years, were being brought into environments where the team that drafted them were returning the majority of, you know, the receivers, at least the top five receivers in terms of all the routes that those guys combined for in the previous years. The one exception was the 2019 Ravens, who drafted Hollywood Brown as part of their transition from Joe Flacco to Lamar Jackson. And in that process, they sort of had some more significant turnover, losing about 60% of the previous year's routes run, thanks in large part due to losing their top two guys with Michael Crabtree and John Brown. And that kind of parallels a little bit the Falcons losing both Russell Gage and Calvin Ridley, although we know that Calvin Ridley didn't play that larger number of snaps due to stepping away from the game to deal with his mental health. And we saw, you know, Marquise Brown go into that environment and not really wow you with his production as a rookie, in part due to the fact that he was nicked up throughout the year and didn't play all that much relative to a lot of these other first round wide receivers. But when he did get on the field, he was productive. When you look at Pro Football Focus's yards per route run metric, he averaged 1.8 yards per route run, which was the fourth best output of any rookie year first round wide receiver drafted from 2017 to 2021 after Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and of course my boy Kadarius Toney were being the only guys to outperform. So, you know, that's a good indicator that, you know, this opportunity that Drake London has and potentially could still perform, and we'll sort of have to see how he impacts this season. That's going to be the main thing we're going to be watching, how players like Drake London impact if Drake London and other players in this 2022 rookie class can hit the ground running. You know, this season is really all about evaluation and development. And I feel like some people have kind of lost track of that in recent days and weeks. And, you know, it seems like some people are of the mindset, particularly post-draft, that, you know, maybe the Falcons can be a little bit more competitive than people thought, you know, maybe a month ago when thinking about this upcoming season. And normally I would be on this podcast quick to debunk that, but we're turning a new leaf here on Locked On Falcons. As we, you know, start off this Locked On Drake London week, we're all about positivity. We're all about good vibes when it comes to this upcoming season and the future of the Falcons. And we're going to explore sort of what this upcoming season is really all about as we continue today's Locked On Falcons as part of the Locked On Drake London week. But before we get there, guys, I do want to let you know that baseball is back. And you can get in on the action by heading over to betonline.net, the number one source for all your sports betting needs and info. And whether we're talking about Major League Baseball, NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, you got the Triple Crown, the Kentucky Derby, you got boxing, UFC, golf, hockey, esports, your favorite Vegas casino games, you got NFL props, season props, win totals, all that and more. And all you got to do is head on over to the website at betonline.net. Use your mobile device to sign up today to learn more about the trends in the action. BetOnline is where the game starts. So, guys, I want to thank everyone that makes Locked On Falcons their first listen each and every day. And, of course, you know, this is a golden opportunity for you guys to like and subscribe on YouTube so that you can get the video version of the podcast before the audio drops. So, you know, here on Locked On Falcons, you know, we built a reputation. Let's not use third person in a royal way. I have built a reputation of being too negative, but now we're turning. It's a new year. It's a new era here on Locked On Falcons. We're going to be a lot more optimistic. This is the homes of dreams and optimism and hopes, gumdrops and rainbows, all that various stuff. No longer am I going to be the guy that pees in the punch bowl that ruins the party. You know, it's only going to be positive vibes here, because in the past, you know, the old me would have been quick to point out that 3 weeks ago, you know, as probably even less than that, you know, most Falcon fans, most Falcon media were convinced that the Falcons were going to be a pretty bad team this year, that they're, you know, virtually or nearly guaranteed to be picking possibly in the top five of next year's draft, where they have a golden opportunity to get one of the best players in that draft. And, you know, I think that was a time when people were convincing themselves that every free agent signing that this team had been making up to that point, even though they weren't going to move the needle, they had convinced themselves that all of those moves were actually solid moves when you look at them in isolation, even if they don't necessarily add up to really improving the roster. And that was kind of the world we lived in. And, you know, the old me would have been quick to point that out, but I'm not that guy anymore, right? I'm not going to be the guy that points out, you know, that at that time, we were all very eager to see what the Falcons would do in their draft, because we kind of knew, because those free agent moves weren't really necessarily moving the needle, that this draft was going to be instrumental and critical to laying the foundation for future success. Because if the Falcons were really going to get impact players that were going to significantly improve this roster in the near future, in the far future, it had to come by hitting on draft picks. And, you know, the old me would have pointed that out, but the new me is sitting here saying, hey, you know, I think the Falcons absolutely did do that. They accomplished, mission accomplished when it came to the draft, and really were able to add a number of players that have the potential to be very good NFL players. Not only are they good NFL prospects, but have that potential to be, you know, high-end players. And really the question moving forward is going to be how good those guys can become. And that's all dependent on the development that they get here in Atlanta in this year and next year and the years beyond. And so the old me would have been quick to point out that, you know, I think some people are letting, you know, these positive vibes coming from the Falcons draft class and, you know, this near universal improvement, all these A grades that you're seeing on various websites talking about the Falcons draft class. You know, it feels like the old me would have been like, I think people are overreacting and letting these A draft grades go a little bit to their head, because it sounds like a couple of these folks are out here trying to talk themselves into the Falcons being actually a good competitive team this year. And the old me would have been the guy that points out, you know, that I've heard some of these really wild, frankly, win totals that some fans have thrown out, you know, since the draft that are, you know, win totals that are approaching, you know, 9, 10 double digit wins. And you sit here and you're a little baffled. The old me would have been baffled by that. But, you know, I don't want to be that guy anymore. You know, the new version of this Locked On Falcons host, this illustrious host, is only about talking about positive outcomes. And the new me, you know, looks at the positive and future success that this team may achieve in 2023, because the new me understands that, you know, these draft picks that are earning all these A grades are probably not going to really impact until, you know, their second season and beyond, even though we know that some of these guys, like Drake London, as we mentioned earlier, we'll get plenty of opportunities. Arnold Akebi's on that list. And yes, much to the chagrin of Mariota stands everywhere, possibly even Desmond Ridder. And those guys could get quite a bit of playing time and potentially contribute quite a bit right from the jump. But really, when we look at those players, it's really going to be about the year one, the year two leap, right? The new me understands that when you look at, say, a player like AJ Terrell, who did play a ton as a rookie, was good, relatively speaking, as a rookie, but really in year two made that big jump to being not just good, but great. And when you look at past Falcons rookies, you know, you look at the guys that impact right away, like a Matt Ryan, those are pretty rare in Falcons history. You go back over the last 20 years, whether you're talking about recent guys like Grady Jarrett and Devontae Smith and Jake Matthews, Jonathan Babineau, Roddy White, Julio Jones, you know, even going all the way back to Michael Vick, that most of those guys that some of the best draft picks that the Falcons have had over the last 20 years, really it was the year two jump that those guys made. And even the guys that didn't necessarily live up to the hype and the expectations, even guys like the Vic Beasleys and the Tack McKinleys and DeMonte Casey's, Tevin Coleman's, et cetera, still all made significant jumps from year one to year two. And that's really what this season is all about. The jumps potentially that the 2020 and 2021 draft classes that the Falcons have make, you know, going back to 2020 with Marlon Davidson and Matt Hennessy, Michael Walker, Jalen Hawkins, all these guys are kind of entering make or break years, right? These are guys that have the potential now going into year three to prove what they are. Right? Are they starters? Or are they backups? And even if they're backups, are they high quality backups? Or are they kind of replaceable backups that you can, you know, draft a fifth round guy that could easily replace that guy's production in the future? And then you look at, you know, the 2021 draft class where you're expecting significant year two jumps from, say, Kyle Pitts, right? We know Kyle Pitts had a historically good rookie season. Can he, you know, build off of that and become one of the most dominant tight ends in the NFL in 2022? What do we get from Richie Grant this year? What do we get from Jalen Mayfield this year? You know, are either one of those guys functional starters? Are they capable starters? More than functional at that point? And then what day three guys sort of emerge? I expect all those guys to be backups. But again, the positive version of myself now that's moving forward on this podcast, you know, also hopes and thinks that maybe the cream rises to the top of those day three guys in the 2020 draft class. And maybe one or two of those guys emerges potentially as a starter rather than just being relegated to being a backup or a rotational player or a role player or whatever the case may be. And so when we look at this upcoming season, you know, the question is going to be how big a jump do these guys make if they make any at all? And that's going to not only then allow us to then apply that and count on a similar improvement with this 2022 draft class that's earning all these A's and getting people excited so that when they're coming into their year two in 2023, when the Falcons have an abundance of cap space and can really address a lot of the needs that they haven't so far addressed. But again, the old me would point out that the Falcons haven't necessarily improved the roster, but the new me doesn't worry about those types of things. Right. And we look at this 2022 draft class that's earning all these high grades. What type of jumps will they make in year two? And that will be kind of based off of what we see from these 2020 and 2021 draft classes. So, you know, the old me would point out that, you know, it's going to be important to see what these guys can develop into because, you know, if we're wind up picking, you know, high in the 2023 draft class, like top five. And the old me would stress that they're probably going to be picking that high, but the new me won't worry about that. But you sit here and you go, even if you do get a player of that caliber, top five worthy, how much development can you expect out of him? And that's going to be based heavily off of what we see from, you know, the 2020, 2021, and 2022 draft classes in this upcoming season. So, you know, I don't want to be that guy anymore that focuses on the negative. I want to be the guy that focuses on the positive to see where these guys develop. And so this is, you know, me stepping out and showing, you know, that Locked On Falcons is a brand new era of positivity on this podcast. And we're going to be all about that this summer and throughout the week when we talk more about Drake London. But, you know, that will wrap up sort of the Drake London conversation, although we have a little bit more to talk about the wide receiver position and its potential and how NFL teams value that position as we wrap up today's Locked On Falcons, answering some of the leftover questions from this past week, I believe Thursday's episode, Q&A and the mailbag and whatnot. And so we got some leftover questions talking about Deion Jones, talking about Kyle Pitts and what his projection could be as he makes that year two jump, as well as the importance of the wide receiver position and more. You know, we'll get into that as we wrap up today's Locked On Falcons, guys. But before we get there, you know, if you want to submit your own questions to be answered on future episodes, of course, you can do so. There should be more opportunities as these, you know, days and weeks unfold over the next month or so to answer listener questions throughout the month rather than having it all pushed into one sort of big mailbag episode. You know, we can maybe devote a segment or two or whatever, a piece of each episode in the coming days to answer some listener questions. So if you want to submit your questions, by all means, do so via Twitter or Facebook at Lockdown Falcons, via email at lockdownfalcons@mail.com, or you can, of course, leave a YouTube comment here on the Lockdown Falcons YouTube channel, guys. And as we, you know, continue this positive vibes here throughout the summer here on Locked On Falcons, you want to continue those positive vibes in your daily routines. And that can include eating positively, eating healthier. And Built Bar is, you know, providing that sort of healthy outlet for you all summer long. You know, if you're on vacation, you got kids on the go, you can stuff Built Bars in backpacks and whatnot. Because Built Bars are the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. They're even better than a candy bar because Built Bars not only taste good, they're good for you. They're low in sugar, calories, and carbs, but high in protein and fiber. Try one of their puffs, the first protein-infused marshmallow with the yellow twerps, the coconut marshmallow, and the churro puff. And if you're not sure what type of Built Bar that you'd be into, by all means, try a mix box, and you'll get 12 different flavors to find your new favorite. You can try their new granola flavors. You know, they've already run out of the chocolate peanut butter, the white chocolate berry. If you want to try a healthy, tasty granola bar, you can try the chocolate coconut before supplies run out. So head on over to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. That's LOCKED15, LOCKED15, for 15% off at built.com. So our first leftover question comes from Undrafted Falcon. He asked, Deion Jones going to be on this football team at the start of the season? And Adam at FalconFan0211 on Twitter asks, what's the future for Deion Jones and the Falcons? So to answer undrafted Falcon, I do think Deion Jones will be a Falcon in week one. You know, I feel like the prime opportunity, the prime window for the Falcons to move on from Deion Jones was earlier this offseason. When you think about trades, there are really four prime windows where trades tend to happen. That's usually the beginning of the offseason where, you know, before Deion Jones's roster bonus was due, I think, on like March 21st. You know, the day I think we traded Matt Ryan, you know, they needed to move on from him then in order to create cap space. Then, you know, the next window is after June 1st, and that's really what we're waiting on. And, you know, I won't dismiss the possibility that the Falcons do decide to move on from Deion Jones in June 1st. And I believe they save, according to overthecap.com, $15 million by trading him. And that's a possibility. Again, you know, this time a year ago when we heard the Julio rumors, I was like, oh, I don't think they're going to trade Julio. And then they wound up trading him. So I've learned the lesson of never say never in that regard, but I still think it's unlikely. And I'll talk about some of the reasons why I think it's unlikely. The third window is at the end of training camp, where teams are making their final roster decisions, and then they're much more willing to move on from guys and make player for player trades. And then the fourth window is at the trade deadline at the end of October, beginning of November. And so I would feel like right now, if I was to bet on the Falcons moving Deion Jones, it would probably be closer to the trade deadline, which means he'll be here through, you know, training camp and into week one. But the main reason why I'm skeptical of the Falcons trading Deion Jones, again, I'm not sitting here saying it won't happen or anything like that. I have no idea. But, you know, we've had Jeff Schultz of The Athletic come on this podcast over the last year and essentially say that the Falcons have been, you know, I wouldn't say shopping Deion Jones. I don't want to put words into Jeff's mouth, but essentially very open to the idea of moving on from Deion Jones. That it basically, if any team wanted Deion Jones, they could have him. That has been sort of the vibe that I've heard, you know, Jeff kind of put out there. And, you know, I don't have any reason to think he's wrong in that. And the fact that the Falcons now for basically 14 months, you know, that began at the beginning of last offseason, you know, haven't been able to move on from Deion Jones kind of tells you that nobody really wants him. And that's kind of the situation that even if the Falcons do want to move on from him after June 1st, to free up their own cap space, you know, I don't know if there's going to be other teams that are going to be, you know, banging down their door to acquire Deion Jones because they would have to acquire roughly his $9 million fully guaranteed base salary. And there's, you know, maybe a dozen teams that have currently enough cap space, even after they sign their rookies, to be able to absorb that type of salary on their salary cap. But not too many of those teams I feel like are likely or really pressing for linebackers. There's a couple. There's maybe two or three. So, again, I wouldn't rule out the possibility. And certainly, you know, there's always a team here or there that may decide to make some other moves to create the cap space to go after him that, you know, right now may only have like $5 million in cap space or whatever the case may be, but may be planning on making some other moves after June 1st to create cap space. And they will pop up on that radar. But I'm skeptical of the idea that the Falcons can trade Deion Jones and they really can't cut him because, again, that roster bonus now basically in his salary is guaranteed. So I feel like the Falcons are probably going to keep Deion Jones for another year and then probably cut him at the end of next year with the idea that Michael Walker or Troy Anderson will be prepared to replace him a year from now. But I think they'll probably, you know, give those guys a year to groom and develop further before thrusting either one of those two, you know, sort of and throw them to the wolves out there at the linebacker position this season. But we'll see. You know, could be wrong about that. Our next question comes from Brandon Olson at WNS Brandon, who is also our Locked On Gators host. I won't let you guys know what we call him in the Locked On group chat. You know, we'll keep that to ourselves, Brandon. But his question is, I need a Kyle Pitts stat prediction. So I usually wait until the end of training camp and, you know, the week of the season kicking off, usually that Wednesday or Thursday episode, to do sort of my official stat projections for the various Falcon players. So, you know, I'll give you one now, without having done all the research and whatnot that I do then as we get closer to the season. But sort of like I would say as a starting point, Kyle Pitts, year two, 90 catches, 1,200 yards, 6 touchdowns seems, you know, again, obviously as we get closer to the season, that number could go up, that number could go down. We'll just sort of have to see. But I think that's a fair benchmark for what I expect for Kyle Pitts at this point in time this upcoming season. Our next question comes from Limited Very on Twitter. He asks, how do you think NIL changes scouting? Seems like there would be fewer high-profile busts from a guy coming into money for the first time. Plus, you can see guys' level of loyalty when they are offered more money at a different program. Yeah, this is not my wheelhouse. I have no idea. My guess is, as you kind of put it and sort of imply, you know, NFL teams will be able to see how guys react to having money before they reach the NFL. And maybe that's predictive of future reactions and behavior in terms of when they get even more money, when they get to the next level. But we'll just sort of have to see. We're entering unprecedented territory with this NIL stuff and how that affects the NFL draft. Obviously, how that affects college sports and whatnot. You know, you look at one situation that's near and dear to me with Jordan Addison, the wide receiver out of Pitt, who was the Biletnikoff winner for the top wide receiver in the nation last year and was a big reason why Kenny Pickett was able to make a big jump in his final year at Pitt and put that team, you know, to win the ACC and whatnot. So we'll see how it all plays out. And for those of you that are not in the know on what's going on with Jordan Addison, like he's in the transfer portal and potentially moving on. And there's been rumors that he's been lured by, you know, schools like USC and others, you know, with like a 7-figure NIL deal as the main onus, you know, behind why he's choosing to decide to leave Pitt or whatever the case may be. So that's something to keep an eye on because I have no idea how that's going to impact not only college sports and, you know, how that impacts scouting moving forward. So our last question comes from Ryan Too Big on Twitter. He asks, do you think wide receiver is becoming a premium position now? How do the actions league-wide at wide receiver affect how we should view the London pick? So, you know, I think wide receiver has widely been considered the fifth premium position for better part of a decade, if not more, after quarterback, offensive tackle, typically left tackle, but offensive tackle, pass rusher, and again, typically edge rusher, just be a little bit more specific, and cornerback being the other four premium positions. And we discussed this quite a bit before the draft when I was going on my anti-round one wide receiver tirades in the week leading up to the draft. And one of the things we discussed was sort of how, unlike the other positions, wide receivers unique among these five so-called premium positions, where the drop-off in talent from round one to round three is virtually non-existent, especially relative to some of these other positions. And, you know, it was interesting to look at wide receiver and edge rusher in particular, where it seemed like that drop off was the smallest among these five positions. And, you know, that led to, you know, discussions about, you know, strong versus weak chains and whatnot. And we'll get into it a little bit further. But, you know, it's interesting with this offseason because you've seen how teams have change how they value wide receivers, because we saw a lot of teams, rather than pay some guys premium dollars on the open market, they moved on from guys. Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill, AJ Brown, a lot of movement at the wide receiver position because teams didn't want to pay, although Green Bay technically did want to pay Devontae Adams. He just didn't want to get paid by them. He wanted to get paid elsewhere. And so, you know, teams were able to move on from those teams and replace them with cheaper rookies and whatnot. And it makes me sort of wonder if wide receiver is going to get treated, you know, as are we years away from wide receiver going more like running back than the other premium positions, where it's going to be harder for teams to justify paying some of these high end prices for these wide receivers, you know, 25, 30 or more million a year when you have virtually an unlimited supply of cheap labor. And so it's going to be harder for guys to get these premium second contracts at the wide receiver position, like we've seen at the running back position in recent years. I wonder about that. And sort of, you know, these are questions that I wonder about when we think about the Drake London pick. You know, I've long held kind of a belief and philosophy that NFL teams kind of overvalue individual wide receivers, and that gets to the whole strong versus weak chain stuff and point of failure, point of success stuff that we talked about previously, and sort of what that meant was, you can look at some of these premium positions like quarterback, like offensive tackle, like pass rusher, where the idea is you're only as strong as your weakest link. These are sort of point of failure positions, while wide receiver and edge rusher, you're only as strong as your strongest link. You could call those point of success positions. And, you know, what point of failure means that, you know, if a quarterback, an offensive tackle, or corner mess up, right? It leads to bad outcomes, interceptions, you know, giving up a sack by a tackle, you know, giving up a touchdown if you're a cornerback, right? But meanwhile, you know, when it comes to like edge rushers or pass rushers or wide receivers, you know, you have multiple guys trying to perform a collective task with a pass rush or getting open, running routes. And all you really need on an individual play to be successful is one guy, one out of four guys rushing the quarterback, one out of four or five receivers out in a route to win their rep, to have a success there. And, you know, I think because of that, that probably that perspective on these two positions, you know, it leads maybe potentially to why teams seem to overinvest at the wide receiver position, why teams arguably may overinvest at the edge rusher position than they should, right? Where they're using their most premium draft assets, those top 10, those top 15 picks on these positions when maybe they shouldn't, or whatever the case may be. And maybe the perception is that if we use those top 10, not top 15 picks on, you know, wide receiver or edge rusher, you know, we're potentially raising the ceiling of those positions. While if you were to wait on those positions and maybe wait till the middle rounds of the draft, day two or whatever the case may be, you know, you're not getting the premium talent quite there. And at those other positions like quarterback or tackle or cornerback or any of these positions, maybe you're potentially raising the floor. And I think there's a compelling conversation to be had about, you know, those employing those strategies for team building. You don't necessarily have an answer. It's just kind of a philosophical conversation. And I think it certainly could be a provocative conversation, you know, one that gets the people going. And certainly something that I think is certainly fun to engage with and compelling to discuss about. Again, probably because there's no right answer. It's just kind of, you know, a philosophical, you know, football philosophical question and quandary to sort of talk about. And certainly when you're a team like the Falcons, who are sort of in rebuild mode, or at least the old me would point out that the Falcons are in rebuild mode, those conversations would be a lot more compelling, a lot more interesting, and a lot more applicable to the future of this franchise. But generally speaking, the way these things go, fans would much rather argue about, you know, quarterbacks. And so the old me, you know, would point that out and kind of be dismissive of that. But the new me, who believes in positivity and say, like, you know, if people want to just argue about, you know, quarterbacks and whatnot from here until eternity, instead of having, you know, compelling conversations about how to build a roster, how to rebuild a roster, et cetera, you know, to each their own. And so, guys, that's going to do it for us here on today's Lockdown Falcons. Tomorrow, we should be joined by Derek Klassen to talk about Drake London and his thoughts on the Falcons draft class, as well as maybe explore some other aspects that Drake London could be bringing to the table as we continue this Locked On Drake London week throughout the week. And then, of course, culminating at the end of the week with the schedule release on Friday and then Sunday evening, the scouting report on Drake London. So make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on your preferred podcast platform. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta, who are giving you the lowdown as we give you the lowdown here on Drake London all week. They're giving you the lowdown on all the other things going on with Atlanta sports, with Georgia sports, whether it's Hawks, whether it's Falcons, whether it's Braves, etc. You can find it all on Locked On Sports Atlanta. Get three different shows, four different perspectives, A to Z with Mark Zeno, Hitting Hard with John Chuckery, and ATL Day Ones with Jarvis Davis and Tanisha Batiste. Subscribe to Locked On Sports Atlanta on your preferred podcast platform, as well as on YouTube. Guys, appreciate it. Till then.